Hi, I'm Job, CEO and co-founder of Remote. And this is Offmute, the podcast that explores managing distributed teams across the globe. I've been lucky enough to talk to Lorraine Charles today in our third episode of the series. Lorraine is a specialist in education and employment of refugees, especially within digital work. And as the co-founder of Namal, Lorraine believes remote working is key to our mission of preparing refugees for the global workforce. So I was truly fascinated to learn more about the incredible work Lorraine is doing. She shared her considerable knowledge of global displacement and spoke passionately about how matching refugees to employers can benefit both parties. I'm excited to share this conversation with you, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Hello, and welcome back to the Offmute podcast from Remote. As usual, I've invited a guest to talk to me about remote working and distributed teams, and this episode promises to be a really interesting chat. My guest today is Lorraine Charles, a researcher with a wealth of experience in exploring the topic of refugees, education, and employment. In 2019, Lorraine founded Namal, a not-for-profit that works with refugees to prepare them for the global workforce. In particular, Namal puts a strong emphasis on remote work and how it can help refugees to overcome barriers to employment. Lorraine is also a research associate at the Center for Business Research at the University of Cambridge, and her work sees her traveling between the UK and the UAE. Lorraine, we're so thrilled to have you on the show today.
I'm so excited to be here, y'all. Really happy to be here and to talk to you. I've been a big fan of remote for a long time, so it's a really pleasure to be here today.
Likewise. Yeah, you've written already on our blog. I am genuinely curious. I was looking into you, looking into the organization you co-founded. And my first question was, how do I pronounce the name? And where did you come up with the name? What is the origin of the name?
So it means Namal. It's an Arabic word. And it means, it's a play on words. The word Amal means hope, we hope, or we work. So really, the idea was we hope in Arabic, but the play on words is really beautiful because with work brings hope. And I was living in the Middle East. I was in a coffee shop speaking to this Syrian lady, telling her over what I do. And I said, I need a name. And she told me Namal. And I thought, I love it. It's beautiful.
It is a really beautiful name. I love it. I would love it if you could tell a little bit about, I gave a little bit away in the intro, but what do you do with your organization? What caused you to found it? Let's start there.
I didn't plan to form an organization. I was doing research, looking at the challenges that refugees faced for employment. You know, I was doing the research in the Middle East and I saw many gaps as a researcher does. And one of the big gaps was that there's a very narrow and traditional view of what employment would look like. So there were great training programs, but they supported refugees to work in the communities where they lived. And at that time, I was working remotely and I thought, well, why don't we put what I was doing and what I saw together? So this is where the idea of remote work for refugees came up, because I was doing research, saw the gaps, and I was doing working remotely myself. And I thought, well, why can't refugees do this? They have these great technical skills. They have really good English. Surely they can do more than what was expected of them at that time. So that's where remote work for refugees came about.
It's fascinating. It seems so logical. I think we plucked a statistic from your blog, which is that there's over 33 million refugees right now.
I think it's perhaps more than that now. I think I wrote that before the Ukraine crisis and more recently Sudan. So the scale of displacement is increasing constantly. It's not something which is decreasing. How do we tackle it? Well, we really focus on a small group of individuals. We can't focus on everyone. So we focus on those who, if it weren't for the crisis, would be in positions of leadership, who would be change makers in their communities. So those who have really good digital skills, really good levels of English, we want to support those. But we see this creating a trickle-down effect into the communities. So whilst we can only work with a particular group, this has a much larger effect on the rest of the community because they are change makers in their societies.
How do you get started with this? What does Namal do? You know, you find these people and then what happens?
So I'll give you an example of the program that we have happening right now in Ethiopia. It's funded by the Conrad Hilton Foundation and we're working in partnership with a Canadian NGO called Digital Opportunity Trust. We have 30 refugee learners who are training to be full stack web developers. So they do the full stack web development program, and our program consists of the professional skills, the human skills, these 21st century skills that we know employers always ask for: communication, time management, leadership. That's what we focus on. Learners will have this holistic education with the technical skills and the soft skills happening at the same time. How do we find them? Again, we use our partners on the ground because we really focus on individuals who already have a certain level of education, who have perhaps been through some training before. We use partners on the ground to help, you know, they're our filter, you know, they funnel the learners to us. At the end of the training, everyone has an internship because we see this as a way to get everyone some work experience. But even much more important, everyone has a mentor. And this mentor is their link to remote work. The mentors are people from remote, people from all these remote companies that are used to navigating this space. I mean, we know that when we find jobs, we don't get jobs through applying, we get jobs through our networks. So we're trying to create these networks for our learners so they can access this world, which we have become so used to.
I can only imagine the range of challenges that you come across while doing this. Can you talk through that? Like, what happens when you find somebody and what are the kind of challenges that you encounter?
The challenges are many. I'll give you an example of one of our alumni who we've actually hired.
That's great.
So I'm really proud that we've hired one of our alumni. He's an Eritrean refugee in Ethiopia. So when he first graduated a year and a half ago, he got a job with someone from our remote work community. So I'm very happy about that. And someone who was a remote influencer on the remote influencer report. And he said, I don't know how I can be paid. So I thought, okay, he doesn't have a bank account that he can get paid into. So I said, okay, let's try Wise. So he tried Wise. He was rejected because he doesn't have a passport. He only has UNHCR identification. He emailed them, explained the situation. He was able to open a bank account. And now Wise accepts a refugee ID as a form of ID to open bank accounts. So that was one challenge. We sort of, each challenge, we have to think, okay, how do we do this? What do we need to do? That was one significant challenge. Another challenge was that a lot of refugees live in places where connectivity is problematic.
Yeah.
We worked in Lebanon. Lebanon was the most challenging place I think we've worked because apart from the connectivity, there's all the crises that are going on. So we just had to find ways to provide solar-powered devices for connectivity, just figuring out what we can do. Hopefully we'll be working in one of the refugee camps soon. And again, we're trying to work with partners that can help support connectivity. Having devices is another problem. So we always make sure that on our programs, we give learners devices because without these devices, they can't actually work. So you have to think really holistically, what do we need to be able to navigate this space and try to provide all our learners with these things?
You already gave a really nice example of the person that you end up hiring yourself. Have there been other successes of which you are particularly proud?
Yes. So I was a beautiful story. On New Year's Day, I woke up and one of our alumni donated back to the organization.
Oh, wow.
He works for Meta. Yeah, we have really incredible, incredible alumni. And we want to have many more stories. We need support, you know, to have many more stories. We need people to hire our talent, to mentor our talent, because they're all really incredible.
Tell me a little bit about the organization. So this is a not-for-profit. So how do you, other than donations from successful alumni, how does the organization work? How many people are working with you on this?
So we have a hybrid model. We have non-profit in the Netherlands. We also have a company in England. We really wanted to build, you know, a sustainable organization. And you know, with my researcher hat, I saw the problems that nonprofits faced. And I didn't want to be on this sort of keep asking for donations. So the idea of having the company was, how do we build a business around the work that we're trying to do? We're not quite there yet. We're going there. So all our projects are donor funded. So we have donors that pay for the training. But then we have other ways of generating income. Companies sponsor our mentorship program. We do have regular donations. We're trying to build a recruitment pipeline so that we can then become much more sustainable. So even if our training is donor funded, our core costs, all the things we want to do for growth and sustainability are covered by the income that we make as an organization. How many people we have working with us? Well, that's an interesting question. All our team are remote. We have someone from Romania, from Tanzania, from the US, living in the UAE and Thailand, lots of different places. We have trainers who sort of just work on the project basis. One, a Tunisian lady in Germany, a Kenyan guy in Kenya. So we really are a global organization. So the core team is small. The core team is sort of six of us, but then we have other people who do different parts, different things as we need. So the trainers just work on projects. We have a lot of volunteers who do other things, but most importantly, we're a community. We've had 170 people who've mentored our talent.
Amazing.
And this year we'll have many more again this year. So we're trying to build a community. It's not just the team. The community is what's important.
That's great. Yeah. I love to hear that. And it's, you know, I always think to myself, well, if you can have the impact on one person's life and be successful there, then that's sufficient, right? That's a good start. And clearly you've been able to do so.
Yes.
If I'm an employer and I hear this, I think, well, that's all great, but what does it mean to me? How do you connect with employers maybe looking for talent? I think it's well established that talent is one of like the great things that is always in demand. Yet we see, you know, especially from our perspective, we see that there's still many employers that are mostly interested in hiring only the people around their office. How does that conversation go with you? How do you think about, you know, convincing employers, hey, maybe you should look at, you know, talent like these people, like these refugees, for example?
So there is a global shortage of talent, especially tech talent. Companies really can't find the talent they need. And the talent that they need doesn't actually exist around where they live. So I think, you know, I think companies are beginning to quickly realize that they literally can't find the talent they need in their areas. So it has become necessary for them to look beyond their 30-kilometer radius. One thing that we do try to convince them about is the benefits of a diverse team of diverse talent, because even though they begin to look wider than their communities, they still look for talent that looks like them, that sounds like them, that went to the same schools. But research shows that diversity improves performance. Diverse teams increase profits. So, you know, it's common sense. Companies want to improve their profits. We know the diverse teams do that. Another thing I say to them is, if your market is only Europe, you need to look beyond Europe for your market, because Europe has an aging population. So that isn't just help for talent, that's for customers. The population of Africa will be 80% under 30 by 2030.
Oh.
So just those demographics alone, it shows companies that they need to look beyond their borders, look beyond their continent for new markets and new talent.
It's an incredible statistic, the young population in Africa. I didn't hear that before.
Yes, exactly. And that's where the talent is. When I was in Kenya a few weeks ago, all the big tech companies are there recognizing that that's where the talent is going to be. And the youth are talented and they're eager and they're incredible.
Talent is everywhere. Opportunity is not. If you're an employer, Remote can close the gap by helping you to hire from anywhere in the world. We can help with hiring employees in countries where you don't have entities, taking care of everything: payroll, benefits, compliance, taxes, relocation, and more. Thousands of businesses rely on our intuitive self-serve platform and our in-house legal, financial, and cultural expertise. Head to remote.com/offmute and make your company a global powerhouse by sourcing talent beyond your borders. With our flat fees and a fair price guarantee, there's no commitments or hidden fees. Remote, because your location shouldn't dictate your success. So how does this process work? You find an amazing, you know, refugee. How do you then match that talent with an employer? How does that process work?
This is the hard part, because right now I think employees are still reticent. The talent that we're working with are still an unknown talent. Their LinkedIn profiles, their CVs don't look familiar, because often they've had gaps in education, gaps in career because of their movement. They go to universities which we don't recognize. So often when a company in the global north hires someone from Africa, they probably went to a US university. So there's some recognition there. But the talent we work with, they don't have many of these points of intersection of recognition that companies are used to. So there's a lot of talking to the companies. I think one of our strategies, which we think is successful, is our mentorship program. Mm. We get companies to mentor our talent. It's very non-committal. They don't have to promise to hire. And when they actually mentor the talent, they see how incredible the talent is. And then they think, well, we're spending our resources mentoring this talent. We see how incredible they are. We need to hire them. So we have sort of, you know, strategies like that to sort of support them. We do lots of advocacy. We have a podcast we organize with MIT Migration Summit, trying to highlight the potential that there is within this community.
And today, this is mostly software engineers that you educate that way. Are you seeing a pull for other positions as well?
We're sort of focusing on these high-tech sectors because this is where the great demand is. I think we will be looking at other sectors later on, perhaps graphic design, UX, UI. But really, right now, our focus is on, you know, on software development, perhaps game design. We're sort of having conversations about how can we train game designers on the African continent, which is quite exciting because, again, there's no representation within the sector. So to have game designers from the continent who bring their perspective to the games and, again, opening up to a much larger audience.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Yeah, the game market is often undervalued by people, but it's larger than the entire media market. So
yes,
it's definitely one to consider. That's very interesting. Have you seen, especially since the war in Ukraine, have you seen a change in how people think about refugees, maybe a positive one, maybe particularly in Europe?
So this is a very problematic issue.
Big sigh.
And I'm happy you brought it up because I like to talk about this. So I think the Ukraine crisis shows what's possible with political will. Ukrainians were welcomed into the EU with open arms. Yes, there were still challenges integrating them into the workforce, but the pathways were there. The same thing did not happen and does not happen with other refugees. And we know that the political will was there to help the Ukrainians. If the political will was there to help other refugees, then things would be a lot easier. So without being too political on your podcast.
No, you can be.
Okay, good. You know, the whole narrative around, yes, we accept Europeans and we don't accept Africans or Middle Easterners is a racist policy from the European Union. There is no other difference which separates a Ukrainian refugee from a Sudanese refugee. The Sudan crisis has happened very recently. I don't hear Europeans saying, oh, come. There perhaps were larger Sudanese communities in the UK than there were Ukrainian communities. But we don't have that permissiveness of the EU towards Sudanese leaving. Sudanese are very educated, so they would easily contribute to the workforce of Europe. But the political will isn't there. So I think what the Ukraine crisis shows us is if there's political will, then it's possible. But right now, there is none.
I think this is a thing where it will be difficult for us to influence policy much more than we are by talking about it. Are there things that are within our control or where we can push on? For example, making it easier to employ people or other issues that I'm not aware of that you might encounter while trying to place refugees?
So I think the virtual mobility that we allow, Remote is a leader in allowing this virtual mobility. And we have to think, in some cases, perhaps refugees don't necessarily want to make the trip to Europe. They leave because they have to for safety, but also where they are, there is no economic stability. If we provide this virtual mobility, bring the jobs to them as opposed to having them come to jobs, then we are contributing to sustainable lives, to economic development where refugees are. So I think, yes, resettlement is important, labor mobility is important, but also the work that we do in providing a mechanism for people to work where they are.
If I'm an employer and I hear all of this and I'm like, well, I need talent. This sounds very interesting. What is the process of working with you?
Tell us what you need and we'll match your talent. Well, right now we want companies to host interns because this is a great opportunity for you to get to know the talent in a non-committal way. Yeah, you know, we ask for it to be paid, but, you know, it's a 4 to 6 month commitment. You can test the talent. You can understand what the challenges are, and then we will help you with the process. We will help you figure out how to address the challenges. And of course, with NAML and Remote working together, we have an employer of records, you know, which is already there. So I would say start with an intern. We do have talent who are graduated, who have a couple of years experience as well, if you need more senior talent. But if you start with an intern, you get to mold them into the type of employee you want. And you get amazing talent. So come to our website, naml.org. You know, I'm sure you'll have it on the show notes.
We will, yeah.
You know, find me on LinkedIn. But we're really looking for organizations who are committed. This is a win-win. You aren't just helping refugees. You're also supporting the work that you do. New clients, new markets. And also having a diverse team better performance.
That's really great. I wanted to ask you, because you have, of course, you have a background in research, as you said, and you said, well, I am I'm a hesitant entrepreneur. I was just doing research. Can you tell us a little bit about the research that you've done and the research that you're doing?
Yeah. So initially I was doing research on education and then livelihoods for refugees. So right now I'm doing a lot of stuff around the future of work. What is the future of work going to look like? Looking at digital labor platforms. How are platforms supporting employment? Because we sort of have an idea that the sort of Ubers and the Upworks are kind of problematic. Mm. We have an idea that the generative AI, data tagging, micro work, there are all these narratives around this type of work. But we're really trying to understand how these types of platforms can support people entering the labor force. So for example, when we talk about gig work, we see it as an entry point. It doesn't necessarily have to be sustainable long-term work, but it's an entry point to the digital labor economy. So I'm doing research around that. One thing, there's very little research around remote work for refugees. This is a new space. There has been no wide-scale employment of refugees remotely. So again, doing research to understand this space, to understand what the challenges are, what the opportunities are, and how best we can support organizations to hire refugees. So I still do consultancy for the UN. I'm doing research for the ILO around digital labor platforms and how this integrates refugees and other people in the global south. But also within NAML, we actually want to do some longitudinal study of what is the long-term impact of our work. Because only then do we know, are we doing the right thing? How is this work impacting communities? Not just the individuals, but families. Are more children going to school? Are kids being successful to go to university because there's a member of the family, you know, who's able to access dignified remote work?
My thesis has always been that, you know, if we do a really good job of connecting talent with opportunities, and being a good job meaning is that they're gonna earn significantly more than they would otherwise locally.
Yes.
That would have like a positive secondary effect. So I guess this is one of the things you're looking into.
That's exactly it. This is exactly it. We have the same hypothesis that by having this money coming into the community, it has a much larger ripple effect. And this means that this person who's earning significantly more could open a business and hire people. Their families do better. Their communities do better. But also they act as role models for others to do the same. Hmm. So we hope that there are more people within the community that also do this work. And we've seen it already. We've had siblings who've been part of our program one year and then a sibling the following year. So we do see the ripple effect happening.
That's great. Yeah, no, you keep us in the loop about that because it's a large part of the reason why we started remote in the first place. And a lot of my motivation comes from hearing those kind of stories of people that were able to elevate themselves and their peers and their community to greater heights where previously they didn't have access to a lot of opportunities.
Yeah.
I am the CEO of a company called Remote. Every other interview, they ask me, you know, what is the future of work? But you're actually doing research. I'm just trying to build software. It's obvious that it's remote work. And you've alluded to, you know, gig work kind of things. You know, what other things are you seeing? What other things are you curious about how work is going to transform over the coming years?
I think the global demographics is one thing that interests me. Mm. We know Europe has an aging population. Japan is critical with the aging population. Yeah. So I think the demographics of who is working and how they're working is interesting. Mm. And also with AI, before November, no one heard of ChatGPT. Yeah. And suddenly it's at the tip of everyone's tongues. So I think one thing we do know is that it's unpredictable and AI is changing things so quickly. But one thing I think we can predict is the people who will do well are the people that know how to use these tools, people who know how to take advantage of it. And another thing which won't ever change is the sort of soft skills, the human skills. Mm. Whilst we want people who are technically good, we want people that we can work with, people who can communicate well, people who can think critically. So whilst the technical skills might change and the actual tasks that we do might differ, we still need people that we can get along with, that we can work with, and people who can think and grow and, you know, and be part of a good team. That's really important.
I love that. That's such a positive message to end on. I have a last question that we ask all our guests. Can you think of a time when you had to deal with a challenge that made you think, well, this can only happen with, you know, remote work?
I mean, everything that I do is a challenge. I mean, the fact that NAML exists was a challenge. I mean, when I first started NAML before COVID, everyone was like, no, it was never going to work. It's niche. Refugees can never work remotely. And now they are working remotely. You know, I would never be able to hire my alumni who lives in Ethiopia if it weren't for remote work. I mean, I have this amazing, amazing guy who's working with me because he can work remotely. I have a great comms guy who's from Tanzania living in Thailand who lived in Abu Dhabi. You know, I said to him, I don't care where you live. I just want you to work with me because you're amazing. My program manager, she's from Romania living in Abu Dhabi. Who knows where she's going to live? But I will never have this amazing team if it weren't for remote work. And for me, the fact that I can choose my team, I mean, that's amazing. And that's why I feel the power of remote. And I'm going to keep hiring my alumni. I would never be able to hire my alumni if it weren't for remote work.
That's great. Thank you so much for being on today, Lorraine.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be with you here.
Likewise. Thank you so much to Lorraine for the truly important work you are doing and for sharing so much on the show today. I loved hearing about the success of placing refugees at companies like Meta and the impact that has on the greater community they live in. And that wraps up episode 3 of Off Mute. We're back in a fortnight with episode 4. Please subscribe to the podcast and give us 5 stars if you like what you've heard. Thanks for listening to Off Mute and catch you next time.